Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. Donald Trump released an executive order or signed an executive order stating that Antifa is now designated as a domestic terrorist organization. I'm going to read through the executive order here quickly, and then we're going to talk about this for a few minutes. So it says Antifa is a militarist anarchist enterprise that explicitly calls for the overthrow of the United States government, law enforcement authorities, and our system of law. It uses illegal means to organize and execute a campaign of violence and terrorism nationwide to accomplish these goals. If you are familiar with the Antifa ideology in any way, you know that this is just straight up not true. You also know that Antifa is not an organized, there is no leader of Antifa. There is no organization. There is no headquarters. This is going to be a very tough thing legally, or should be a very tough thing legally. And by very tough, I mean impossible, basically, to uphold from the courts, right? Now, in our current climate, legality means virtually nothing. The courts will do what Trump asks them to do. Continuing, it says this campaign involves coordinated efforts to obstruct enforcement of federal laws through armed standoffs with law enforcement, organized riots, violent assaults on immigration and customs enforcement, and other law enforcement officers, and routine doxing of and other threats against political figures and activists. Antifa recruits, trains, and radicalizes young Americans to engage in this violence and suppression of political activity, then employs elaborate means and mechanisms to shield the identities of its operatives, conceal its funding sources and operations in an effort to frustrate law enforcement and recruit additional members. Individuals associated with and acting on behalf of Antifa further coordinate with other organizations and entities for the purpose of spreading, fomenting, and advancing political violence and suppressing lawful political speech. This organized effort designed to achieve policy objectives by coercion and intimidation is domestic terrorism. So they frame it here as if Antifa is some big funded, organized mob. It isn't, right? Antifa is an idea. It literally stands for anti-fascism. When you have a government that is anti-fascism, what does that make your government? Folks, it's fascist. Antifa is an idea. It is not an organization. Now, some of the things that they might mention here are more anarchist in nature. They say that Antifa, in the definition at the very beginning, they said Antifa is a militarist anarchist enterprise. And they're conflating the two. I don't think that anarchism either is a could legally be classified as a terrorist organization, because, again, it's not an organization. It's just an idea. But even then, these ideas have to be separated. The idea of anti-fascism is just literally to be against fascism. Anarchism comes with its own ideas and philosophies, you know, much of which has its own merits, but that conversation shouldn't even be a part of the Antifa conversation, especially when you're determining whether or not Antifa to be a, you know, domestic terrorism. So in the second paragraph here, this is where it gets frightening, because it actually spells out some of the implications. So it says Section 2 designation is a domestic terrorist organization. Because of the aforementioned pattern of political violence designed to suppress lawful political activity and obstruct the rule of law, I hereby designate Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization. All relevant executive departments and agencies shall utilize all applicable authorities to investigate, disrupt, and dismantle any and all illegal operations, especially those involving terrorist actions, conducted by Antifa or any person claiming to act on behalf of Antifa, or for which Antifa or any person claiming to act on behalf of Antifa provided material support, including necessary investigatory and prosecutorial actions against those who fund such operations. Let's be real about this and about the purpose behind this, right? All relevant executive departments and agencies shall utilize all applicable authorities to investigate, disrupt, and dismantle any and all illegal operations, especially those involving terrorist actions. This is an excuse to arrest political opponents. It is an excuse to suppress any sort of protests and have a zero tolerance against any resistance, especially against ICE or, you know, riot police and those types of things. In the past, somebody who was arrested at a protest or at, you know, a high tension police line, for example, maybe they threw a tear canister back at the police, right? Or maybe they lit a firework and set a firework off during a protest. Those people would be arrested, you know, charged with who knows what, disturbing the peace, I don't know, any other number of things they could make up. But now that person can be designated Antifa, because who's to define what Antifa actually is and how you determine whether or not somebody is Antifa? You know, if I was at a protest and I got asked, hey, are you anti-fascism? I'd say, hell yeah, I don't like fascism. And I would then be, what, designated a terrorist for that? And, you know, what are the implications of that? From a legal standpoint, again, we just saw that Luigi Mangione had his terrorism charges dropped. So as far as designating someone a terrorist legally or linking them to this so-called Antifa organization that doesn't exist is going to be extremely difficult for the Trump administration to be able to accomplish, but it's not going to stop them from trying. And more than anything, I'm guessing that it's going to stop some people from speaking out, from acting, from showing up to protests out of fear. And that is a very large part of what he's trying to accomplish here. Hopefully this is one of those items that will either fail or just won't really go anywhere. Hopefully it's just words on paper that as an executive order, it falls flat in its ability and power to actually cause any change or intimidation. Hopefully we're not seeing this leveraged, but it is, I guess, another tool that they've added to their tool belt as far as charging protesters or just political enemies and people that they don't like. You know, is it now illegal to wear a shirt that says Antifa on it? Is it illegal to join the anti-fascists of Reddit subreddit? Is it illegal to simply state that I am against fascism? Is it illegal to be a World War II vet who fought fascists, you know, all those years ago? Not that many World War II vets are still alive, but is he going to condemn the actions of the military in fighting fascism? Who knows? Who knows? To be seen, we'll kind of have to see where this goes. I've got just a few minutes left here, and I want to jump over and talk about one other quick thing, and that is an article from CNN talking about the Pacific blob is back and bigger than ever. This time it stretches across the entire North Pacific. Folks, I am not a climate scientist, and much of the questions and technicalities surrounding the increase in heat and the prevalence of these sort of heat waves, these Pacific blobs, frankly go over my head just a little bit. I read all sorts of differing ideas, and there's controversy and conversations and contention among, you know, what is actually happening here and what are the consequences of it. And I'm not qualified to give my opinion on the matter. Rather, I'll just kind of give some of the ideas that the article is talking about here and some of the different things I see people mentioning in this regard. So this is, again, a CNN article talking about how this is the fourth hottest marine heat wave that we have had. Its size is unprecedented. They call it a blob, but they say that that's a misnomer because it's basically stretching the entire width of the Pacific Ocean and most of the North and South as well. I say it stretches about 5,000 miles from Japan to the west coast of the United States. Talks about how these hot ocean waters have contributed to Japan's hottest summer on record. They also hit an all-time national maximum temperature record, which was 107.2 degrees Fahrenheit. Extremely, extremely hot. they talk about how if this doesn't stop, these Pacific heat waves are basically going to contribute to atmospheric rivers on the west coast of the United States, which we have seen do so much damage over the last few years, and which, of course, contribute to the fear of another arc storm at some point causing massive, massive damage to California. Says the sea surface temperature difference from average across the entire North Pacific smashed an all-time record for the month of August with reliable data stretching back to the 19th century. So record after record, we just continue to smash these. Says the North Pacific warmed at the fastest rate of any ocean basin on Earth during the past decade, which is crazy because we've also been talking about how much the North Atlantic is warming and how, you know, the poles are warming at three times the rate as the rest of the planet. Talks about how in the past there was a especially severe heat wave like this one, but that lasted a lot longer, that went from 2013 to 2016. And it says that heat wave remains the most severe on record. And because of its duration and intensity, that heat wave caused a historic die-off of seabirds, other creatures, sea lions, fish. It was terrible for sea life. And it talks about how there's seabirds there that are still not recovered from that heat wave. It impacted populations. And it's going to be incredibly difficult for them to recover if we continue to have these frequent heat waves continue. Now, it does talk about how this one is likely to be much more temporary, that they think as we go into late fall and winter that the heat wave should dissipate. It doesn't go as deep, essentially, so the winds and current should be able to stir the cold water up to the surface and help cool things down. That's yet to be determined if it's a certainty, and we'll see in the coming months. But it talks about how there's a bunch of different reasons why this might be happening, right? And there's research papers that have been released basically stating that more than anything, it is climate change, right? It is just the fact that we are emitting CO2 into the atmosphere. It is warming the planet. That planet is causing disturbances in currents. There's one called the PDO, which is the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. And there's an index value for that, which basically says whether it's higher or lower than average. And anyway, I'm not going to get into the science of that, mostly because I don't understand it all. But essentially, that current has seen disturbances over and over again, just like the AMOC has. But beyond currents and climate change, it also talks about how, well, I should say beyond currents and CO2, it also talks about how the loss of albedo, and this is coming from actually a comment on the forum and the subreddit about this, talking about how there's been a major albedo drop since 2014. And so there's some papers linked there basically saying that especially in the Pacific, it's opened up this darkening of the water, which has caused a decrease in cloud cover, and that decrease in cloud cover has increased the temperature of the sea surface. Now, beyond albedo, there's also others that are saying that it could be due to a decrease in the emissions related to shipping. Essentially, it was regulated what types of aerosols could be put into the atmosphere through shipping. And in the past, while, you know, some of those aerosols had kind of a dual effect, and one of those effects was that it masked and kept some of the warming out. Now, as those have dissipated, they're kind of rapidly dissipating aerosols. That has allowed for that warming to essentially backfill. And there's some fear that the amount of warming there, the potential for more warming, is still high. So we may see continued warming in the Pacific, according to this. And this is from Leon Simmons on X. He is a climate scientist who says he's been warning about this very issue for decades. So anyway, there's so much that goes into this side of things. I would need to do a lot more research to feel like I am qualified to be able to really speak on it. But from my point of view, suffice it to say that it's happening. The Pacific is experiencing anomalous weather, and the frequency of that anomalous weather is continuing. Sea surface temperatures overall from a global standpoint have been well anomalous, way above, you know, standard deviations beyond the norm over the last few years. And that's not something that seems to be wanting to slow down too much, even as we head away from the El Nino and into neutral and La Nina. So it's going to be interesting to watch what happens over the next couple of years. See if it makes its way back down, or if we have found ourselves in a new normal, several deviations above what is expected. Thanks for being here. See you again soon.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.